This is Gaten the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Gaten the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode we are looking at the seasonal anime Id Invaded. Honestly, this is an anime I think I've fallen in love with recently, and I couldn't resist but change my schedule a bit in order to talk about this one anime. So in this episode, we'll be speaking about the basis of the show being the id. So we'll be speaking about Sigmund Freud and the id. We'll also be talking about psychoanalysis, which is a very big theme in this anime, as well as repetition and just generally what I think of the show. So let's just get into it. This is episode 29 of Gaten the Mecha. An analysis of Id Invaded. Id Invaded this season is probably one of the front runners when it comes to the psychological genre. I think psychological isn't something that we get too much of every season. We do get it a bit. Like last year, I think the main one was probably Boogie Pop Wa Warawanai. And then also Babylon as well, because I know there's a whole group of people that are really into Babylon and I'm very willing to check it out already. So just to do our alerts before we start this episode properly, I must issue a spoiler warning for Id Invaded episodes 1 to 4. Episode 5 is out as of when I'm recording this. I'm kind of behind schedule already, but Id Invaded episode 5 is out at the moment, although I will not be including that in my analysis simply because I haven't watched it. So that's what this podcast is going to be about today. Spoilers for those episodes. We're more looking at some overriding themes, and I'm not going to be extracting too many details on each and every character, but I'll be looking more at some specific things and then an overriding thing, which is all the Freudian subtext and all of that. But anyway, let's just get into the show itself. Here is a plot summary of Id Invaded so far. Meet Sakaida, master detective, husband, and father. That's all great until you find out that he's in prison. And this is no ordinary prison. This is a futuristic, maximum security prison. Those who work at this prison are able to jump into the extracted minds or the ids of the people at the crime scene. So the people working at the prison themselves aren't jumping into these id wells. They are walking through these cases with the help of a master detective. In every id well, there's a recurring theme. A dead girl known as Kairu is in each one of them, and in order for Sakaido to solve these cases in each Idwell, he must find out how this girl has died. And so Sakaido is on this larger mission to discover who Kairu is and discover his own faded past. And so this is the story of Id Invaded. So that is really the plot. There's quite a bit going on, I'm not gonna lie, and there are some things that I intentionally extracted just because I feel as if it would kind of complicate the story a bit more than it already is, and so I just wanted to get the basic framework of how the show works each episode, so far anyway. One thing that I find so interesting about the show is how flexible it is, and I think we can attribute that to the nature of the show, and that is because we are in the id. And for that, I have to explain what the id is. It's the space of the unconscious, and because of that, we get all these interesting scenarios which we wouldn't be able to get in a standard case in the real world. Because we're in this influx state where the unconscious mind is projecting its inner desires and thoughts and primal instincts, the show allows itself to get really creative, and I really credit the director Ai Aoki for doing that. And that even comes with almost extra kudos because of the fact that this is an original anime. There is no source material for this show, and that kind of adds some intrigue to it. This is completely unique, and it's not something I think I've seen before. It's really flexible, and so this is probably the main reason why I want to explore this show, and specifically the things that underlie it. So as I was previously saying, each id well is varied and unique because of the fact that it's within the id and the unconscious mind. And so in order to understand the id and how glorious this show is, or at least so we can appreciate it, we have to look into Sigmund Freud and the nature of the id. Born in 1856, Austrian neurologist Sigmund Freud has probably been one of the most influential, yet controversial, people within the field of neurology and psychology till today. He is the founder of psychoanalysis and one of the flagship thinkers or intellectuals of the modernist movement. In April of 1923, towards the latter end of his life, he publishes his research paper known as The Ego and the Id. And the intention of this was to discover and explore the relationship which existed between these three parts of the psyche: the ego, the superego, and the id. If we zoom in closer on the id, which is the focus for today, it is known to be the realm of unconscious thinking. Freud even described this himself to have its own world of perception, and we see that within the show in the way that the id is almost limitless and controls itself. It's a self-regulating mechanism. The id contains the most primal instinct of that being, and only seeks satisfaction and pleasure, and hence is disconnected from reality or consequences. I think knowing these things about the Freudian subtext is really important because I think it allows us to understand where Aoki is coming from. It's really valuable that we're able to see where a director is coming from, particularly as this is an original story. And because we have no sake of comparison, I think the subtexts are a lot more apparent, and we can't use the excuse of comparison to another piece of material. We can only judge it relative to its subtext. And the thing about having a subtext like this is that there is no obligation for it to be one-to-one, whereas, you know, you have the obligation of, say, or usually there is an obligation or expectation, at least from the audience, that you adapt one-to-one because that's what's been created. But so It Invaded explores this relationship between an intertext being something that completely is not anime or manga or whatever, but these larger ideas, which are really important. And so just to interject, this is a preliminary review, and I don't often do these. In fact, if anything, I usually try to avoid doing these. And I say that because I don't usually like judging something before it's finished, and hence I don't think I'm going to judge or overly judge In Invaded to the maximum degree, because it's not over and anything can happen. Franks, I'm talking to you. And so I like to stay away from that, but I will be just trying to analyze the overriding theme, which is the Freudian subtext, and how that sort of adds to the show, what the show has to offer as a whole and that sort of thing, within what we've explored so far within it. But you never know, the Freudian subtext could just dissipate over the next episodes or whatever, because I'm in the past and you might be listening to this when it's episode 13 or 12 or whatever. You might be listening to this when the show is completely done, years in advance, and you're just maybe wanting to consider it, or you just finished it. You never know. But that's what I'm going to be doing today. And so the first thing I want to start with when we incorporate these Freudian ideas of the id is, I think it gives us a good amount of insight into the criminals, or I say quote unquote criminals, since the MHA episode completely twisted my perception of what makes someone bad. But if we consider them criminals because they are in a prison, I think it gives us a good amount of understanding as to how bad these criminals are. When we consider the nature of the id, a place which controls itself and also has these primal instincts, which I want to zoom in on, I think that tells us that these criminals have a lot more deeper motivations and are controlled by something that goes a lot further than just, you know, their circumstances. This is something that seems to be psychological and it goes a lot deeper. I think that potentially, although I don't know where I'd really stand on this, potentially opens up this debate on nature or nurture. I don't really know what Freud argues when it comes to nature or nurture, because I read some things which we'll get to later, like the repetition compulsion, which would suggest almost nurture, or at least can bring things into that. But I think it opens this weirder debate as to where these antagonists are coming from and how they're really attacking the situation. These are people that have a greater desire than just changing the world. If anything, they're looking for satisfaction. They're looking for something a lot more simple than that. But that simplicity is something that is so much more important to them. And so they attempt these very bad things if we take episode 4, burying someone literally within a coffin and leaving them to rot, and episode 3, the bombings as well, episode 2, the drilling, all of those deeds seem to be something that are breeding satisfaction, or we can potentially argue for breeding satisfaction within these criminals. The hard but interesting thing is that we don't particularly know how director Aoki, as well as the scriptwriter, which I should have mentioned earlier, Otaru Majo, interacted with these Freudian ideas, and so we can kind of only put them in the perspective of them and assume that that's what they took out of them, because I don't have any access to, say, interviews to know what they've done. I don't know if they've done any interviews on It Invaded, but even so, we don't really know if that's what they intended, and makes my analysis slightly harder, but I'm still down for the challenge. It's, there are going to be a lot of unanswered questions, and that kind of adds to the ambiguity. So when we consider the Freudian subtext, it's, these are criminals effectively looking for pleasure within their criminal acts or within their bad acts. Bad is a really hard word to say today, because after the MHA episode, I'm really considering, does bad even exist? And so that's going to be a tricky one. But if we just, for this episode, keep riding with this idea of bad, we can say that this is on a very bleak perspective of bad. This is one which is for self-gratification. It's for feeling good about oneself, and that involves harming other people. That is pretty messed up from my perspective. But obviously from their perspective, it's just pursuing self-interest and doing what they feel is good for them. It's a narcissistic job almost. But let's take it to a different direction. Let's talk about another potential interpretation of the Freudian ideas which underlie this text. I would say one of the ways these are incorporated would be within the missions themselves and the tasks which they take up, or which Sakaido mainly takes up within the show. I may be stretching it, and this is another example of me debating with my notes, but I am alluding to saying that Sakaido jumping into the id wells and performing these tasks, being solving cases, is only just another metaphor for psychoanalysis. These crazy tasks, although they do seem crazy, and yes, they are, have a bigger purpose, and I think it's one that's almost right in front of us. It's nothing that's obscure. But when we again consider what Freud argues, I think it makes a lot more sense, and that is how he's able to bring the unconscious, so the activities within the id, into the conscious, and that involves solving the case. That relationship between Sakaido and the rest of the team over in the prison is psychoanalysis in itself, and it's psychoanalysis at its core. Freud argues that the unconscious can only be brought into the conscious through psychoanalysis, and obviously in regards to performing it, in the case of going into the id wells, it's almost gamified and is turned into something that is obviously a lot more enjoyable and interesting to watch. But it's deciphering these ideas and motives which a criminal has, and then that materializes into these conscious, more logical and bite-sized things which those over within the real world, or the quote-unquote real world, are able to understand and then turn into something useful to solve a case. And I guess that's done really well through how we get cross-cutting very often between Sakaido and then the team over above. It's constantly shifting between the two, because I guess that's how the process works. And that is kind of the philosophy of analysis. I did a tiny bit of reading on this, and at its core, deduction really is one of the key things. And so eliminating these processes, or at least deciphering them and going through them, eventually gets us to a place where we can understand something at its core, which is, again, one of the key parts of analysis. It's to gain a greater understanding and just gain a greater understanding of it. And that's something I think is done quite well in It Invaded. I think episode 4 was probably the greatest example of this, and how it did feel simply like a game to, I guess, the person committing the crime, and how they were playing a trick. It wasn't something that was brought up too much within the episode, which I think is a shame. They didn't really suggest that, you know, he is someone who almost gamifies murder and make these very unpleasant acts seem pleasant and fun. Although, again, within our psychology, they aren't, but within his, they are hilarious. And so he gamifies that, we see it within his unconscious mind as well. And so I like the link between the larger world, or that world, and the id as well. There's a good connection between the two. I think it did strengthen over time. But 4 and 3 really do that quite well in relating their behaviors in the overworld or the real material world and reality to what's within their psyche. Like, I didn't feel as if there were moments where I was kind of like, okay, we have the id scene and then we have what they're like in real life anyway. Even though their life isn't completely explored, or at least the life of these prisoners or criminals are only explored to a decent extent, but it's a bit uneven between the two. In episode 3, I think it was explored quite a lot, whereas episode 4, it was kind of just a, we caught you now, and it was more focused on the victims of the case, which I think is fair as well. And that kind of proves that the show isn't going to be completely formulaic, which I really do appreciate. And that's one side point I want to raise, and that is how when we have shows like this, and one which depends on a subtext, something that is a crucial idea of psychology, you obviously don't want to violate those and completely make no sense out of it, but you don't want to be formulaic in how you present the show, because you're then just being almost a slave to a subtext. And I understand that, and I know I'm basically doing this whole podcast preaching Freudian ideas and what Sigmund Freud himself argued in relation to psychoanalysis. But I don't think that means that a director and a writer should, you know, shackle themselves to these one thing. And I think that's something that they're not doing, which I'm really happy about. I think we can say just barely that we learn more and more about the psychology of our protagonist himself and how he handles situations. And this is just a bit of a quick point. It's just how those narratives sort of fold over each other. So we get our episodic narrative being criminal, psychoanalysis, or at least so far from episode 1 to 4, or at least 3 and 4 do that the most at least. And then we compare that to maybe, and then on the other side we have our overarching narrative, so that is Kaido, that is Sakaido's previous life, that is Sakaido's daughter and wife. It's those things which override through them, and I am a fan of that connection. When we have a 12 episode series, usually I do expect a bit more of an episodic thing going on, and then, you know, maybe a mini arc towards the end. But I think this show is doing something different, which I appreciate, and that's being able to just mix structures together, weaving a structure which isn't dependent on one thing. As I said before, formulaic shows are only good for a certain amount of time, and so I'm not saying, you know, go on a story arc, and that's even coming from me, someone that's quite a fan of arc structures. I make a whole podcast talking about arcs most of the time, but even so, I'm not a fan of a show that completely is a slave to a formula. And so bridging the two together adds a bit of intrigue in relation to both narratives, and you want to see who this criminal is per episode, but we also want to understand Sakaido himself, and we learn more about Sakaido the more we tackle these episodic narratives. So just to summarize, two narratives going against each other, really interesting how they collide and also just build on one another. Now I want to talk about probably my favorite part of the show so far, and that is episode 3. I think episode 3's probably been an episode that I haven't been able to forget for a long time, or at least I think episode 3 of Id Invaded has been one of the few episodes in a long time that has just made me just really interested within a show, or just makes me think quite a lot. There aren't many episodes that, I think just with seasonal anime in general, there's a tendency sometimes to watch and forget, and I'm not saying that's everyone. I think maybe that's just me, and sometimes I lack commitment with shows in general, but when it comes to something like Id Invaded and episode 3, there's something about it that just kept me really into it. Something about it just kept me drawn to it, and so that's why I'm watching this show on a weekly basis. Unlike a lot of seasonals where I'll wait for a lot of the episodes to pass and then I'll catch up, and then by the season finale I'm watching it with everyone. That's probably going to be me with Isaken as well, although I did plan to watch Isaken ages ago already. But in the case of Id Invaded, it's just something that's really keeping me hooked to the week-by-week formula. Maybe we can say it's because of the fact that it's not so formulaic. But back to the main point, and that is episode 3. Episode 3, I think, defined the show for me, at least what we've seen so far. I know, I keep saying that, but it's defined how I think of the show so far. It's cemented an image into my head about it. And that's because I really like how this episode is structured. So when we enter episode 3, we have the first part, which is the classic explore the id well. And the id well is quite an interesting one. This is one where we seem to have a rotating building, and we're in the psyche of a criminal, and there's a sniper behind water. We don't know where this sniper is, and so we have to kind of figure that out. We get a lot of people crawling and trying to avoid bullets, people committing suicide off the building because they don't want to be shot, and then we obviously have Kairu. The thing that really got me excited about this part of the episode was just how fast-paced it was, or at least how many things were coming at us at the same time, and I think that kind of reflects the nature of analysis as well. So there was a criticism which I heard, and everyone is rightful to a criticism, but they were talking about how dialogue within the show can be sort of unnecessary, or it's just thrown in for the sake of it being thrown in. And so some parts of the analysis almost, or Sakaido's way of figuring out what was wrong within the tower and how people are getting killed and ultimately how Kairu was killed, he was sort of saying things, and yes, he did say things that didn't actually solve the case. And my response to that is, I think that is how analysis works. We need to understand as much as possible and then deduce from there, rather than everything leads up to this one thing, because I think the problem with that is that if everything unrealistically leads to the goal or what we're doing, despite him being a master detective, we kind of lose a sense of realism. In a detective show, not everything that one thinks of initially leads to what it is, or that's how we solve the case. It's not deterministic almost. I think there needs to be a balance between what actually contributes to the case and potential false flags, or just at least seeing the process of that sort of ever-evolving mind of Sakaido as he tries to figure out what's wrong in that very moment. And so I really enjoyed this part of the episode. Sorry to just go on a bit of a why I don't agree with this criticism tangent, but I really like this episode in how the beginning is really frantic and we get loads of these other ideas, as I said, the ones which aren't particularly all right being thrown at us, and then those build into ones which eventually make sense. And then when we eventually get the case, it's kind of like, ah, that all made sense now. And it's more the process, I think, that comes with it, which is really exciting. Also, this is kind of in relation to the criticism, but it relates to why I enjoy this episode, and that is the pace. And part of this criticism, or part of some criticisms I saw from It Invaded, was that, again, it's things being unnecessary, and Sakaido and other characters simply just have dialogue and relatively extravagant ways of speaking for the sake of it. And I can kind of understand that, but where I stand is still opposed to that. The way I see it is that it gives me more of a Sherlock experience, and I'm not sure if everyone is aware of Benedict Cumberbatch's Sherlock BBC drama. I'm from the UK, so I kind of have no excuse, but although I'm sure you know of Benedict Cumberbatch, Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe, Sherlock as well within obviously Sherlock, and there's something about him where I feel this is almost like the Rick and Morty effect, and how you don't fully understand every single thing which someone is saying, but that adds to the effect that they are beyond you. Similarly to Rick Sanchez, I know people don't really like Rick and Morty examples, but he is a character which goes beyond what a lot of the audience actually understands when it comes to referencing. Most people don't understand the majority of the references in a show like that, and the same applies to Sherlock as well. He's very smart, and so the pace of things and some of the references he makes, or the jokes and remarks and all of that, is something that is so rapid that it exemplifies what it means to be a master detective. And I don't think it's something the audience needs to fully be able to get, because he is supposed to be that. He is supposed to be someone which you aren't fully able to understand, because you're not a master detective, but he is. And so when we get these elaborate speeches and these interesting ways of speaking and dialogue, etc., I kind of enjoy it because I feel a level of detachment, but it's an intentional detachment. I'm supposed to feel slightly detached or alienated by the show because I'm not within their league, but seeing someone do something so well and so complex is what I get the thrill from. And then we have the second part of this episode, and this is my favorite part of the series at the moment, and that is the kind of linking more to the Freudian psychoanalysis stuff or subtext. And that is how Sakaido in himself almost performs a psychoanalysis on this one person. And although it might not necessarily be, or I'm not particularly too aware of, you know, how you would literally perform psychoanalysis, but in the sake of at least the Freudian ideas, which I understand, and how he's able to tear down the ideas which this man had initially, I think is a good representation of them at least. If you cast your mind back to this episode, we have both the pyrotechnician and Sakaido. And so Sakaido is able to drive him to suicide, but if we just skip before that, although that is the climax obviously, but if we just skip before that, the most interesting part is how he's able to tear down his almost nihilistic philosophy which he has, or the supposed nihilistic philosophy which he has. If we look to the arguments of Freud, as Freud said that the id is an area which contains the most primal instincts of the human mind, and so, or at least the human psyche, and can only be brought out through psychoanalysis. And what Sakaido does is through his speech, although I'm not particularly going to get into what the speech is, but he goes through his almost multiple layers of assessment in order to sort of flesh this out. But by the end, he's able to get to this almost finishing line that suggests that he obtains pleasure from being the last one standing within the world, and he's almost thriving off competition, which is completely different to a nihilist view, which would say that, you know, there is no value in competition, there is no value within life, and life inherently, there isn't a point to all of this, and that is only a facade. He's only putting that up to justify that, and so that's sort of the ego driving the id. But then when the ego is almost taken out of the question, which Sakaido is able to do, those thoughts which come from that, or at least that overlying or fake ideology which the pyrotechnician is suggesting, is taken out of the picture. The almost original motives of that one person or character is revealed. And so that sequence, I know some people said that it was a bit of just a dialogue dump. And I disagree, because when we contextualize this with what this show is based on, the id and Freud and psychoanalysis and psychology, it makes a lot more sense for him to do that, because he's peeling away layers which we didn't once think were there. Peeling those layers and dialogue in general is such an important sort of commodity to the show, because that is how we analyze. We analyze through not only asking questions, but vigorously tearing away at one's character to find out what the base is and the true character, if you want to simplify it, the true character of that one person is. Because that is what drives us all. That is what drives the people up in the overworld or reality. That is what drives the people whose ids we're in. That drives Sakaido. It drives everybody. Everybody has this one desire for pleasure maximization. And it's something that we're not able to hide completely, although it can be hidden, and that's where text comes in, that's where dialogue comes in, because we're able to peel those layers and get to the core of the issues. And then the final thing for this episode, just a bit more Freud, and I just a slight tangent, this is like gonna be a minute. I did find out that there was an interview about It Invaded recently and the minds behind it. Sadly, I was not able to check it out before this, but I will check it out and potentially, you know, discuss it on Twitter or something like that. It's really interesting though to see that there is a lot of thought going into this anime. But if we get back to the show and Freud, there's one more thing that I want to discuss, and that is what is called the repetition compulsion. This comes from Freud's essay from 1920 called Beyond the Pleasure Principle. This is actually something I wanted to raise when it comes to Evangelion, but I'll probably hold out a bit before we talk about things like this, for example, in Evangelion, but in relation to It Invaded anyway. But in relation to It Invaded anyway, I think it's just a really nice touch, which I think was added from this layer of Freudian ideas, and that is the whole thing on repetition. As the repetition compulsion implies, it's about how we naturally repeat circumstances and how we again do that over and over and over again. In the case of It Invaded, we're constantly repeating these almost simulations of the id well, or the id of one's psyche. As we go in, we potentially die, we go in, we die, we go in, we die. Constant repetition. And Kairu, and the relationship between Kairu and Sakaido is kind of contextualized by this. And there's this one thing that Freud suggests, and that is how images, or what can be described as romantic images, when we say romantic, we mean sort of reminiscent rather than, you know, the the loving sense. Romantic images, past images can return an understanding or a memory from a past event. That sounds kind of basic, but it makes a lot of sense, and Freud just sort of brings that forward and consider when he's writing as well, this in 1920. So although it seems kind of obvious now that if someone shows you a picture of something from a long time ago, you're more likely to remember because of that, but in the case of something like trauma, that I think is something which defines the relationship between someone like Kairu and Sakaido, and that is why Sakaido knows who he is, because of that constant repetition and this sort of reinforcement of this image, which is this dead girl who he somehow knows but doesn't truly know and remember. If we just escape that, I just think the whole thing of repetition, whether it's Kairu or Freud or whatever, I just love the repetitive nature of the show. It just keeps me constantly on edge, and it forces you, or at least me as an audience member, to consistently try and analyze the situation and understand what is going on, because the show is almost giving us multiple chances to try and understand something. So in the case of episode 4, although not explicitly said, we kind of learn that there's a pattern to this, and how there's the explosion, and then Sakaido obviously dies because he's not aware of the explosion, that he falls out of the house, and then we learn that there's a platform, and therefore from the explosion, he jumps onto the platform breaks, he reaches the pipe swings down, he's able to jump up and then save the girl, for example. And that repetition, as it's broken down into stages, I just get a lot of satisfaction from it. That is not in reference to my id. Whatever, I don't know about my personal id psychology, but really just fun show on the whole, and it's constantly just keeping me engaged. I think that's something that I've needed within anime, and that's not to say other shows aren't doing that, but it invaded sort of, I feel as if I'm taking part within the show, and I'm trying to simultaneously work out what's going on, and the mystery unfolds in due course, but it's not one which is laid right in front of you, and so it just invites you to do some thinking for yourself. And I think that's what the show has done for me, not even just in the context of watching it, but it's opened me up to exploring the show even more. In the case of Freud, for example, although it's not actively inviting anyone to do that, it's just made me think a lot, and that's a really long-winded way of saying it made me think, but that's really what I mean. Id Invaded has made me think, and that is why I enjoy it. I'm really not good at summarizing things very well at the moment, but that is how we do it over here at Get in the Mecha, the overly analytical anime podcast. So that is the analysis over for this week's episode. Let's just do some fun stuff. So here is the Link the VA, or Link the Voice Actor segment for this week. This is a fairly decent length of VA segment for this week, I'm not gonna lie. I think I have some very good roles and a very good voice actor. So just to summarize for anyone who is new, the Link the VA segment is very simple. All I do is I go onto my anime list. If you do want to check out that, or my anime list just in general, so my personal list, you should be able to on my website. I have a link there just to my mouth, the about section, and also just on each podcast post on the blog. Anyway, so what I do is I go into my anime list, go to the show of which we're watching, which is It Invaded, or which we're talking about, and then I find one of the roles for one of the voice actors. Sadly, I've already spoken about the voice actor for Sakaido in the last episode, because sadly, for the same show which I was discussing, being BNHA, Chisaki was the same voice actor, so that was Suda, and so I'm not going to use the same voice actor, because that would just be milking content for no reason. So anyway, in this case, we are looking at the voice actor for Koharu in the show, who also works with the people over at the prison, or the institution anyway, the detectives. So then what I do after that is, after finding one of the roles, I look at all the other roles they play in the world of anime. So in this case, we are looking at voice actor Mao Ichimichi. She plays a lot of roles this time, and I'm not just saying that because, you know, I just want to prop them up. They genuinely just play a lot of roles already, and the two from two battle shonens, which I'm quite fond of, which I want to talk about in this segment. So the first one is Iris from Enen no Shobitai, or Fire Force. She's the nun girl, basically, and I like this character a lot. Generally, the voice is quite subtle. It's nothing shouting. Most of the time it's the casual latom or something like that, or she'll just be saying thank you. She's really nice in general, and the voice suits that quite as well. It's also kind of works to its disadvantage because, you know, there are times within the show, and I'm not going to go too into it, but there are times within the show where she is feeling hurt and you can't get that expressed, but that's intentional in terms of how she'll put on the nice voice. I'm smiling, I'm a nice and pure person, which she is. But then when you just get that, it's kind of sad. Because it works both ways, because obviously when you're sad and you don't sound sad, you're usually trying to hide something, or at least you're putting up a barrier between you and that other person. So that's a really smart use of voice acting, and I really do like Iris. And then we come to our second voice role, and that is Mamushi from Eo no Exorcist, and specifically Kyoto Saga arc, or the Kyoto Impure King arc. And if you did not know, I spoke about the Kyoto Impure King arc all the way back in episode 6 of the podcast. Not my best episode in terms of quality, but surprisingly a lot of people enjoyed it. So that's not to say Eo no Exorcist is going anywhere, just for confirmation anyway. I do really enjoy Eo no Exorcist, but Mamushi. The Mamushi voice is probably your typical tsundere flexibility of voice, if that makes sense, in how she's able to aggress when necessary, and when she's embarrassed, she's shouting a lot. Not overly shouting, but the embarrassed tsundere shouting. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not the biggest tsundere fan, so I might be slandering them just a bit, but Mamushi is a good character. She doesn't appear too much in the Kyoto Saga anyway, at least she's more beginning, a bit of the middle, and end. She's still important, don't get me wrong, but it's not as if I devoted my life to watching the Kyoto Saga arc because I stan Mamushi or anything like that. But she's quite nice. If the two were to meet, I think that's a question that I've been putting forward in most of my episodes. If Iris and Mamushi were to meet, I think they would have some okay conversation. I think Mamushi would potentially be able to tame herself a bit for the sake of having a conversation with someone like Iris, or Iris would potentially just be a bit... I feel like Iris is the sort of person that when something doesn't sound great or she's not really into the person, she's not going to say that she doesn't like them. Instead, she'll be the sort of person that says, "That's interesting." The passive-aggressive type of interesting, I heard that recently where people say interesting in sort of this not very nice way. I feel as if Iris would do that same thing, not because she means to be mean, but she doesn't want to be mean, and so she just says, "Yeah, that's interesting," to Mamushi while Mamushi rages about her marriage and whatever. I don't know why or where I think of these, but I have a lot of fun on the segment, okay? So that has been the Link the VA segment, and before you pack up, if you do enjoy the show, or if you have been enjoying the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Helps out Get in the Mecha, shows me how I'm doing on the show, and also other people get to see it. I'm trying to build a community around Get in the Mecha so we can analyze together. It'd be really fun, and it would be really appreciated if you do so. And so let's pivot slightly to the In the Moment segment. I'm just going to speak briefly. I'll probably just speak about one thing this time, about what I have been doing this week in terms of anime and manga. As I said, I just want to speak about one thing, not because of the sake of time, but I just think it would be better to dedicate this one segment to one thing because I love this thing so much, and that is Spy Family. Spy Family is what I've heard to be the manga of 2019, and as someone who does an anime analysis podcast, I pride myself in being skeptical. Okay, I'm kidding, I'm not that skeptical over when people say things are good. It's just as someone who I would say I'm a bit of a hipster, not intentionally, but when I see a lot of people crowd around something, it doesn't scare me, but makes me think, is it as good as they say? And then I just get a bit, I get a bit wary and a bit to whether they're saying this product is good just because they have a really good connection with it, or if it's genuinely a good thing that a lot of people can enjoy. And in the case of Spy Family, they were very, 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 very right. I take back, although I didn't say anything, I didn't actively say, Spy Family is probably not that good. I don't do that generally, but in the case of Spy Family, I'm not gonna lie, I was skeptical. So I decided to say one night, just got my phone, blue light filter, let me check out this manga, let me see what this hype is all about. And to my surprise, it was good. And I'm enjoying it so far. I'm on like chapter 8 at the moment. And I have to say, this manga is so smooth. Everything feels intentional, as if things that are introduced within the narrative, they all play a part further on, and it doesn't feel as if, you know, something's just there because it could have been, which I get from some manga, Masamune's Revenge, I'm talking to you! But in the case of this manga, I don't want to compare the two too much because they are pretty different things, but in terms of just storytelling in general, which is a universal concept, I think this is something which is something that I think has been mastered, or I might be speaking too early, 8 chapters in, but it's something that's been very refined in Spy Family. You can tell that the mangaka knows what they're doing in how they're putting this story together. Not only just in terms of pace, but just literally what do you put, what elements do you put within a story, and what do you put to make this feel as exciting as possible. And so let's get to some closing thoughts and then wrap up this episode for this week. So, It Invaded. I'm going to try and keep this short. I said that for the BNHA episode, but I'm going to try and keep this short. The reason why I have enjoyed It Invaded so much is because it's able to keep me engaged within the show. It's constantly inviting me to try and figure out what's going on. And also, it has, weirdly enough, triggered me to research the foundations of the show. The last show that actually made me do that was Evangelion, and I watched Evangelion quite a while ago now. So when a show's able to do that, I think I really appreciate it, because those subtexts have become so important, to the extent where I'm not going to say that people that don't research Freud won't understand It Invaded, because you easily can. It makes a lot of sense on its own. But it's made me want to just figure out so much more and dig deeper within it, as the show does itself. The show is always about digging deeper and peeling back the layers of the show. And while that's been going on, I really just enjoyed peeling the layers of this show. Thank you for listening to episode 29 of Get in the Mecha. I really enjoyed making this episode. It did take a bit of research, but I think it was worth it. I enjoyed talking about Freud, and I really do enjoy bringing in stuff like psychology and history and philosophy into our podcast, because it just adds an extra dimension for us to talk about, rather than being fully grounded in only just storytelling devices. Similarly to the BNHA episode, when I brought in sort of ideology, I really enjoyed doing that. It does take time and effort, but I really just do appreciate you listening and spending your time actually hearing what I have to say. So thank you so much for your support. It does mean so much. If you haven't already, although you should, if you haven't watched It Invaded, and this hasn't persuaded you to watch It Invaded, and you are either a psychology student, someone that likes psychological anime, someone that knows and potentially enjoys the studies of Sigmund Freud, although that's a hard thing to do considering how controversial he is at times, or any of the above, or even none of the above, please watch It Invaded. It's a really great show that I don't often give out recommendations, I'll be honest. I don't really like saying you should watch this, this, and this. Obviously, there are some shows that I really enjoy, but would I recommend these shows to many people? Not all the time, because I just know that they won't like them, and so I sometimes try to persuade people into watching some shows, but I wouldn't say I have a concrete recommendation list. This is for one of the few times I'm actually going to recommend It Invaded. And sure, you might not like it, but at least please appreciate how much has gone into this, and not my podcast, but the text which the show sort of is based on is so insightful and interesting. And that is why I would try my best to recommend it to you. But anyway, thank you for listening to this episode. I have been your host, Jamal, today. Thank you for listening. Stay anime. Never feel afraid to get in the mecha and try something new. I haven't said that in ages. But anyway, I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows: 48 Hours by Alex McCulloch, Lullaby by Alex McCulloch, 8-Bit Title Screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, and Difference by Chasers Gaming.